Hey, everybody. Good to have you this morning. We're going to do something a little bit different this morning, okay? But before we do that, I need to point out one thing that we didn't have in the bulletin. In a couple weeks, on Saturday the 25th, we are going to redo the pergola outside the women's shelter at the Springs Rescue Mission. We took a stab. We took a run at doing it last fall. And as some things happened, they changed their plans, and we expanded it, made it bigger. And, guys, the church has paid for all the materials and everything already. We just need some bodies who can help us on the 25th. If you're interested in doing that, put Springs Rescue Mission on your card, and Gil, who's in charge of that and the missions team, he'll contact you and give you all the details with that. All right, so Cindy, come on up here. All right, so guys, most of the time we take a passage of scripture, we unpack it, and we look at it, and then there are times that the church we address very important issues. You know, we talked about different things like suicide and social involvement in life and matters that God's word speaks into. Today's a little bit selfish, okay? Because one of the things, probably the top question that I get as a pastor is I get phone calls. Somebody is in crisis. Somebody is in a hurtful, painful situation. And I get a call, and you want to know, okay, what do I do? What do I say? What do I not do? All right, well, Cindy Bryan has been at church for a long time. She's the founding director of His Healing Light Ministries. It's a national ministry, and thousands of people all over the country have gone through her class, Healing Journey, and had their lives radically changed. She talks about issues related to these things often. She did a podcast on helping hurting people back in February. I listened to it, and I just really felt that that was something that we needed to hear as a church today, okay? So, This is going to be a practical thing. The bulletin, the outline today is designed for you to have a take home, okay, of things to help you as you're interacting. Because God's word says the God of all comfort comforts us so that we may comfort others in times of need. And so I really think today is going to be a help in us doing that, and encouragement, helping us to be better equipped to serve God this way. So, hey, join me in welcoming Cindy. Cindy, thanks for teaching today.
A number of years ago, I was attending a function. I was at a table with several adults, and there was a gentleman with us, and he happened to be sharing that within a couple of years, he had lost his young adult daughter in a car accident. And there was another man at the table, and he turned to him and said, "Well, at least you don't have to pay for a wedding now." And it was, I think, shocking to everybody at the table. I think the gentleman thought he was being funny. He just didn't know what to say. I don't know what the father thought, but I'm guessing it was a pretty hefty dose of shock and anger to hear something so insensitive. You know, his dreams had been shattered for his daughter, and the last thing on his mind, of course, was money. I don't think people intend to be cruel. I think for most of us, it's just an uncomfortable moment. We're not sure what to do, what to say. We want to be helpful. We don't know what that looks like. I think most of us are sympathetic, and we want to see if we can help in this situation, but we just maybe don't know how to express it. And that's why Stuart asked me to share this message today. I have been directing His Healing Light Ministries now for 17 years, 15 years right here at Fellowship of the Rockies. So this is ground zero for the ministry. And back in the day, it was just a local class that I taught live here at the church. But since then, we have grown to a national ministry with thousands of students every year. The flagship of our ministry is the Healing Journey class. We offer that every year in September, right around the corner. It's starting next month. God led me to write the Healing Journey after I had gone through 9 years of healing in my own life back in the 90s. I experienced a ton of pain and difficult circumstances through things like suicide and divorce and sexual abuse and even satanic ritual abuse. So I know what it means to grieve. I know what it means to be in a painful situation. And through all of that, I have been the recipient of some fabulous support and some that was rather painful, to be honest. And I've also learned a lot from my students who have shared their stories of hard things then they have been through. So I know a lot about grief and suffering. And I want to talk about some good things to do and some things to avoid. Let's start with that first, some things we want to avoid doing. And I want to begin with the issue of fear, because I think fear blocks a lot of people from reaching out. Fear of saying the wrong thing. Fear of doing the wrong thing. Fear of catching their pain. First of all, I want to say pain is not contagious. Their circumstances are their circumstances. You're not taking their pain home with you when you reach out to help them. So if you have an opportunity to speak with somebody who's going through devastating circumstances, perhaps they've received a cancer diagnosis or they've lost their job, lost their home, their material belongings, perhaps maybe a divorce, and maybe a loved one has died, I want to challenge all of you to make the choice to not let fear get in the way and to stop you, and instead to offer some encouragement. This is not the time to be self-protective. Their circumstances are their circumstances. So it also, if you are afraid, it can also be an indicator that you perhaps have some unhealed wounds yourself. And maybe their pain is touching on something you did go through. And if that's the case, I want to encourage you to get healing for that and let God take you past that so that your life isn't paralyzed by fear anymore. We never want to have fear calling the shots in our life. Now, if the issue for you is saying the wrong thing, guess what? We can solve that today. So the first thing we need to look at is our motives. So if any of these motives resonate with you, an adjustment is probably needed. I just want them to stop hurting. I want to make them feel better. I want to change their circumstances. I want to help them get back to normal. You don't have the power to do any of those things. So that's not our goal. That's not what we're going for. And it's probably not even what they need, at least in the early stages. Our society believes in general that pain is bad, grieving is bad, and we shouldn't linger in our sadness, that we should just push past it and ignore it and move on. It's best just to get over it. But this is a terrible approach because it keeps people stuck. It has the opposite effect of what we're hoping for them. It causes them to remain in their painful circumstances. Honestly acknowledging what is happening and allowing Jesus into the situation is the thing that will bring restoration and freedom to their life. That will be the thing that helps them move forward and eventually get past that. Neither of those things are within your control either. Those are choices that the hurting person has to make for themselves, and hopefully they will do that. Going through our painful circumstances with Jesus on his terms is the thing that will bring healing and freedom. So cross this off your list. Change their situation and make them feel better. Better motives include wanting them to know you care, wanting them to know they're not alone, wanting them to know that you're there for support, offering support that's truly helpful. It's when we have the wrong motives that we say the wrong things. Don't try to cheer them up. Don't try to point out the benefits to the tragedy. For the hurting one, that is salt in the wound. We are not there to help them look at the bright side. When you've lost a child, let me tell you, there is no bright side to anything. And this tells the hurting person that you're there for yourself, not for them. It also tells them you have no idea what they're going through. And I want to stop for a second and say, you do not have to have been through their circumstances in order to be a good, supportive person. That's not a requirement at all. The absolute worst thing you can say, and this is in the case of a loved one's death, is they are in a better place right now. And right after that, for bad things to say, is God needed them more than you did. Because that suggests that God is cold and heartless, that he's a selfish God, only thinking about himself. And that's not the God I worship. I worship a compassionate, loving God. One of the painful things Brian and I heard after Brianna died was somebody saying to us, well, I know what you are going through. My dog died last year. And I know pets are special to their owners. I know it hurts when they die. But to suggest a dog and a daughter are the same thing is insensitive. They are not the same thing. So don't say, I know how you feel. I know what you're going through, unless you have been through that particular situation. There's another example. These are all true stories that I'm sharing with you. Somebody at church came up to parents who had lost their teenage son just 3 weeks earlier and asked this couple, are you feeling better now? And as a side, in general, just leave the word better out of any question you're asking, any inquiry, conversation. Don't use the word better, because it sets up the expectation that they should be in a different place than they are, perhaps. And if they're not, then they're going to disappoint you, and or they're going to lie about it. I mean, it's a no-win for the person who's hurting. So let's not use the word better in our questions. Again, it points to our selfish need. What we're really saying is, your pain is making me uncomfortable. Please try to get over it quickly so I feel better. What we need to realize is that a period of grieving is required for every loss without exception. Now, obviously, I didn't grieve my distant uncle's death anywhere near I did when my stepdaughter and my grandson died. But some grief requires years. That's a normal time period for some situations. And then not every situation does involve the loss of a loved one. As I said, it could be loss of your home or loss of a job or an opportunity. And unhelpful comments here might include, well, God has something better for you, or look on the bright side, at least you have each other, or whatever. Again, those are comments that might make you feel better. I promise they won't make the hurting person feel better. It says in Proverbs 25:20, NIV, like one who takes away a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar poured on soda, is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. So here are some other pitfalls to watch out for: avoiding people or ignoring them, acting like it never happened, because this sends the message that you don't care. Don't preach to people. Don't spiritualize to them. I know as Christians we can think it's our duty. It's our duty to pull out a scripture verse, particularly. We love to slap this one on people, Romans 8:28. It says, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purposes. It's a great verse. It is a true verse. God will work good in the situation. But quoting that when somebody is deeply suffering and in pain could just as easily turn them against God. Okay, so I'm going through this tragedy so God can do something good. It doesn't make sense to them in that moment. So let that be a good encouragement to you that God is going to work good. But don't quote that verse or others like it. They're not feeling good, and preachy words will not make them feel better, and that's not our goal. I just want to remind you of what I just already said. We're not there to make them feel better. We're there to help them see that they are loved, cared for, and supported. All right. Now, if the loss came because of a wrong committed, let's say there was a criminal action, an affair leading to a divorce, a murder, being fired, don't tell the person. They just need to forgive that person. The hurting person needs understanding, and they need acceptance. Forgiveness is a very long road for some people. Now, I will be the very first person on the planet to tell you forgiveness is necessary in order to get total healing and restoration, without exception. But there's a time for that, and a lot of healing steps need to occur usually before that particular step. And so don't tell them they just need to forgive the person. We're there for support. We're not there to fix people. We're not there to fix anyone and change their situation. All right, we've talked a lot about not to do. Let's talk about things that do help. There are three things that are very helpful. The first one is to express caring. The second one is to invite sharing. And the third one is to offer relieving. So let's take the first one, express caring. Now, this includes any comment that acknowledges they're going through something difficult and lets them know that you care about that. So here is an example. I'm sorry you are going through such a tough time. Man, isn't that simple? But that one hits the bullseye. I'm sorry you're going through such a tough time right now. Now, that accomplished our goal. Let them know, we know something difficult. We may not have all the details, but nevertheless, we care. Great thing to say. Here's another good one. I'm praying for you, and I will continue to pray for you. Now, don't say that if you don't mean it. But if you are willing to pray, I'll tell you, that is heart-lifting. That is soul-lifting to know that you have people behind you who are going to continue to pray for God's help and healing and strength through that, whatever you're going through it. And one more. I was heartbroken to hear. Dot, dot, dot. One of the most helpful things those who are suffering need to know is they're not alone. To have people who see what they're going through and care about what they're going through, it just speaks volumes to the person. It sends the message to them that they matter, that their life is valuable. So number one is express caring. Number two is invite sharing. Now, obviously, the level of relationship that we have with the person will impact how far we go and the different types of things we might say and do for them. If we barely know the person, then we probably won't go any further than just to say, I'm sorry you're going through such a tough time right now. But if we have a level of relationship with them, there are some other things we can do. We could say to them, ask them a couple of questions, like, how are you today? How have you been doing lately? How are you coping with changes? Those questions allow them to be messy and respond with the messiness going on in their life. Now, if they respond to you with, I'm fine, I'm okay, a lot of us do that because we don't think the person perhaps really wants to hang around for the whole answer. So if they say, I'm fine, I'm okay, you might follow up gently with another question. Well, tell me how this last week went for you. They might be testing you to see if you'll listen to the entire answer. Whatever you do, don't turn the conversation back on yourself. Don't make it about you, except a brief mention if you did go through something very similar. Like, yeah, I lost my job too a few years ago. Wow, I remember how scary that time was. Or I remember when my dad died, it was so painful. You know, and then just stop right there. Just let them know you can relate, but don't launch into your story necessarily. You know, if I'm speaking with parents or family members who are dealing with the issue of suicide and they find out I've lost my father, stepdaughter, and grandson all to suicide, they're very eager to open up and share and speak with me because they know. I've been there. I truly do understand what they're going through right now. So those types of comments can open up the conversation, encourage the person to share more, but don't launch into your story unless they ask you. Remember, you're trying to show them that somebody sees and cares. So for this reason, receive whatever they say with grace. And don't be offering advice, because they're never going to want to talk to you. Again, don't tell them what they should and shouldn't be doing. Just let them visit with you about what they're feeling. It's important that we don't lay expectations on people who are going through a tough time. Now, if they feel safe enough to divulge with you that they've gone back to some bad habits, which is very common when somebody is having a hard, going through a painful situation, let's say they've gone back to smoking or drinking or eating too much food, just receive that comment from them. Don't go tell them that, well, those things aren't really good for you and that they're bad and that might make things worse. I promise you they know that. They don't need you to tell them. So, any question that invites them to share what they're going through is helpful, but be aware everyone is different. Some will welcome that opportunity, and some will not. So just receive that with grace. If they decline your invitation, don't take that personally. You still accomplish good. You sent the message that you care, and that's what we're trying to do here. Another mistake we can make, and this is in the case of the loss of a loved one, is thinking that the person doesn't want to talk about the one they lost. Most do. Most don't want to forget about the one they've lost, and they would love an opportunity to share what they remember about them and what they miss about them. So don't be afraid to ask if you have that level of relationship with them. All right, so we talked about how we can express caring, how we can invite sharing. Let's go to the third one now, which is offer relieving. Is there anything you can take off their plate that will make their life a little bit easier? Ask them. There's too many possibilities to mention here because circumstances vary and people vary. But obviously, if somebody's lost a home to a flood or fire, we can offer to help with cleanup. We can offer with replacement goods or furniture or clothes or whatever. Couple things that are good in many types of situation are bringing in meals, great help, or offering to do some babysitting. Again, it just depends. It's a little bit harder when there's been a death, but you might be surprised. When Brianna died, it was weeks before I was up to going into a store. So perhaps offering to do some errands or pick up some groceries for the person would be a big help. Practical things are probably what they need most. When we're going through a painful situation, we don't have any energy. And that's because painful events, grief, take energy. It's work when we're grieving. And so there isn't a lot left for the rest of life. That's what makes it so hard for us. So offer things that require energy, like mowing the yard or cleaning the house or doing the laundry. If the one you're reaching out to isn't suggesting anything in the moment, you might ask if it'd be okay if you checked back in a week or two to see if there was something you might need to do. You know, a lot of people automatically refuse any offer of help. So we might need to be gently persistent to let them know, no, we're serious. We really want to be there if they will let us do that for them. Now, if you're really close to somebody, it's a good friend or somebody you've known a while or whatever, it's okay to kind of get in their face in a kind way and say, you know what, my friend, I'm coming over to help you this week with some cleaning and laundry. What day is good for you? So you can be a little more persistent. And don't stop checking because just it's been 2 weeks or 3 weeks since the tragedy or the crisis or whatever it was. I know when Brianna died, we were barraged with wonderful, loving offers for help. So many meals and people were there and so forth. And, you know, and then that tapers off pretty quickly. Usually about week two or three, that's pretty well gone. But for Brian and I, that ordeal went on for a very, very long time. you know, so somebody checking in and helping that second, third month down the road would have been good too. Now also, if you are serious about being part of the support, you need to be a trustworthy person. And that means you don't judge their circumstances, that you accept them and whatever it is that's going on. Life is messy. Yep, the situation might be their own doing, like they got fired from a job or, you know, lost their kids due to an addiction or whatever. And it might not be their fault, but it might involve shameful circumstances like suicide or sex addiction or gambling or an affair or something like that. So it's very important that we don't judge and we don't talk to other people about those circumstances. I can't say this too many times. Hurting people need acceptance, not judgment. Love is what needs to characterize everything we do and say and how we reach out. We are not qualified to judge anyone. God is the judge, and He is the only one who can do that. It was Christ's unconditional acceptance of people that drew people to Him. He received people as they are, messy and hot mess people. He received them right as they were and loved them, accepted them, and He invited them into the truth later on. You know, the woman at the well was so shamed by her community, she had to draw water when no one else was there. But Jesus was willing to sit there and visit with her. And Simon the Pharisee at his little dinner party, the prostitute who wandered in and anointed Jesus' feet with perfume mixed with her tears. Simon was feeling pretty important about himself, you know, having the popular guy over to his house. But it was this hurting woman who was no one, likely a prostitute, worshiping him and Jesus in front of everyone. That's who Jesus gravitated to. He elevated her above the religious guy. Jesus gravitated to the hurting people. Can we do the same? Many hurting people have experienced significant rejection. They've been beaten down, and the last thing they need the church to do is to take a fearful or a judgmental stance and avoid them. Hurting people are so vulnerable. They're vulnerable to believing lies, lies about themselves and God, lies about God, like, see, God doesn't really care about you. God isn't really trustworthy. You knew He didn't really love you all along. Now you know that for sure. We have an enemy, Satan, who loves to piggyback on painful circumstances and speak these lies. And if they're not lies about God, then they're lies about our identity. See, you're worthless. You're trash. You are not a precious creation of God. Some form of guilt usually accompanies every hard event. So your involvement, simply to say, I care about what you're going through, my friend, speaks volumes. It helps fight against those lies. When we touch the life of somebody, even with those simple words, it fights against those lies and helps them know that their life does matter. Healing takes time. Don't ever think or suggest to somebody they should just get over it and go on. This is unhelpful and bad advice, and usually an indicator that the person speaking has no idea what the healing process involves, as well as their own personal agenda, which is, I just need you to get over this really fast. The healing process takes time. It involves different steps. So it's important to be very respectful to the people that you're reaching out to, that you are speaking to. And when you do, be sensitive to the Holy Spirit. As I said, everyone's different. What works with one person won't work with another person. Some people really do want to be left alone. And if that's their response, don't take it personally. Just know that you still did something good in offering to reach out to them. Go ahead and suggest to people things that you are willing to do for them. And if they accept your offer, don't drop the ball. You need to be there and follow through, or you'll be part of their wound. You don't want to do that. And if you have children, always involve them in this, because it is wonderful training for kids so that they will grow up and not be afraid of hurting people and know how to connect with them as well. I know when I'm speaking to a group as large as this that there are many hurting people in attendance. And some of you are connecting with my words because you are the person who's hurting. And something I can say with confidence is that every single person in this room knows someone who is hurting. And so if that is the case for you, I want to invite you to consider joining Brian and I for the Healing Journey class. We start this every September, so that's in about a month. And if you want a more concentrated opportunity for healing, our ministry has an event coming right up. We will be at Mission Training International and Monument in 3 weeks on August 23 to 26. For a very small investment of time and money, you can receive an enormous amount of healing. Brian and I do this event live. We teach it. It's very hands-on. And we want to encourage you to consider coming. We teach the same steps that are taught in the Healing Journey class. And these steps are highly effective for changing lives by following God's biblical process. And we have an offer today. The early bird has already price already expired, but we're extending it this morning if anyone is interested. The Healing Weekend is an amazing place for a married couple to come and work on issues in their marriage. In fact, it's a great place for any adult struggling with something that is holding them back from living the life God created them to live. So Brian and I will be out in the Welcome Center if you want to come visit with us, ask us about any of these things. And next time you are visiting with somebody and you discover that they're going through a difficult time, remember always to express caring, invite sharing, and offer relieving. Thank you.